Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, Election Day, 13 days away, and the battle continues in battleground states like Florida, North Carolina, Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania. We'll give you the latest of what's happening in this campaign. We'll also hear from the North Carolina Senate candidate on the Democratic side, Deborah Ross, as she tries to unseat the Republican incumbent. Also, almost 1.5 million people in Haiti still need assistance following Hurricane Matthew. They need food, water, and supplies. We'll tell you how you can help and talk with someone who's a reporter there who's been covering that country for years. Black women working to stop violence in America. I'll talk with members of Black Women for Positive Change about their week of nonviolence. Plus, actor Glenn Turman, y'all know him from Cooley High, also A Different World. Well, he joins me to talk about being on the hit show Queen Sugar. We'll also talk about the largest wage increase for Black workers in 15 years and what it could mean for you. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One.
When Donald Trump is making an unprecedented attack on our democracy, millions of people are registering, voting early, and volunteering in this campaign.
Tell you what, you vote for her, you're crazy, okay? I'll tell you. She is the worst.
Folks, it is a battle for the Sunshine State as Secretary Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump both campaign in that state where 29 electoral college votes up for grabs. A new poll out shows that Trump has a 2-point lead within the margin of error. Three other polls show Hillary Clinton leading. And so Florida is certainly a state that is in play. Trump is hoping the latest news regarding the Affordable Care Act will garner more support on his side. The White House revealed the cost of coverage will rise an average of 25% next year.
Hillary Clinton wants to double up and triple up in Obamacare. The numbers will go through the roof. Your taxes will double and triple. And in the end, it's not affordable. You can't do it.
It's killing our businesses. It's killing our small businesses. It's killing individuals. And it's no good. Deductibles are so high, you can't use it. You'll never get to use it. Job killing Obamacare is just one more way that our system is rigged, believe me.
But in talking with various analysts, they say that for the most part, costs will not rise because of subsidies provided by the federal government. Now, of course, Trump has been continually blasting the Affordable Care Act, trying to go back to a critical issue. But he also, in talking about the Affordable Care Act, made a big mistake in front of his staff when he was speaking yesterday in Miami. Check this out.
All of my employees are having a tremendous problem with Obamacare.
But later, he was advised that 95% of his employees actually don't even use the Affordable Care Act. Well, late last night on a Miami radio station, Hillary Clinton responded to the issue of rising Affordable Care Act costs.
The costs have gone up too much. So we're going to really tackle that.
Now, of course, yesterday, Clinton got a major endorsement from Republican and former Secretary of State General Colin Powell. He said Clinton is fully qualified to serve as president despite his past criticism of her private email server. Also, President Barack Obama took another shot at Trump while campaigning for Clinton during an interview on Jimmy Kimmel Live on ABC.
President Obama will go down as perhaps the worst president in the history of the United States! Exclamation point. At real Donald Trump. Yeah, at real Donald Trump. At least I will go down as a president. Personally, for me, if I were able to run for a third term, Michelle would divorce me. So,
when you watch crises. The debate and you watch yeah. Donald Trump, do you ever laugh? Do you ever actually laugh?
Most of the time.
All right, folks, joining me right now on our panel, Carmen Berkley, Civil and Human Women's Rights Director for the AFL-CIO, Shermichael Singleton, Republican political consultant, C.J. Jordan, former political and community affairs deputy director for the 2016 Republican National Convention. Folks, when you look at polling data, when you look at what is going on in this particular campaign, Donald Trump has an uphill struggle. Now, granted, he's trashing media, saying, oh, my God, then the polls are all bad. But then, of course, when the polls were in his favor, he just loved them to death, Shermichael. And what really jumps out at me is I still don't understand a candidate who refuses to stay focused on policy, and he keeps inviting the very negative stories that have driven his numbers down.
Well, look, Roland, that's been Trump's issue throughout this campaign. Even if he were to win Florida, North Carolina, electorally, it's almost impossible mathematically for him to win this election. And then again, of course, he's defied all political odds. I mean, he's the definition of a political phenomenon. So I wouldn't say that, you know, we won't see another surprise. But mathematically, it almost seems unlikely. But again, I'm sure, you know, Kellyanne Conway and his advisors are probably extremely upset that he sticks to an issue for maybe a day or two, and then he pivots back to something that makes his campaign spiral back down towards the ground. So I, you know, think at this point, it's almost impossible to shift strategies. I've worked for three presidential campaigns, and I can almost tell you at this point in time, if you haven't quite figured it out, Roland, then the odds of figuring it out are almost non-existent.
CJ, it is confusing for a lot of Republicans who I know to hear a guy give a speech on Saturday at Gettysburg talking about his 100 days, but then he focuses on saying he's going to sue the women who have actually alleged sexual assault. It's like any campaign person would say, you don't bring up what the other side's been attacking you on.
And that is correct. But then again, the people that voted for Donald Trump are those who didn't want a perfect person. They didn't have and choose someone who had been in the system for a long time. They wanted an outsider. And based on that individual novice that he did, would anybody else had done that who had political training? Probably not.
But they don't want somebody who has been accused multiple times of sexual assault. I mean, you look at his numbers when it comes to college-educated women.
We may lose that for the first time in a very, very long time, which would be extremely
In modern history. I mean, you know, college-educated white women, college-educated men, Clinton has closed that particular gap. I mean, and so again, it's like, dude, what are you doing?
But I mean, but the people that are supporting him, unfortunately, when you talk to them, they don't care. And actually, a couple of days ago, I was in Canada talking to a cab driver, a Syrian refugee, and he told me I was crazy for not voting for Donald Trump. And when I talked about, what about the bigotry and the misogyny, he said, well, what about Hillary Clinton being a liar? Whoa, not more of a liar than Donald Trump
being a Syrian refugee?
Yes, a cab driver said to me I was crazy for not voting for Donald Trump.
Well, Trump doesn't want that guy in the country.
And that's what I told him, but he didn't care about that. So, again, for them, it's not about the misogyny and the bigotry. It's actually not even about the policies. It's about how much they dislike Hillary Clinton.
But here's a piece, though. What Hillary Clinton is continuing to say is the race is not over. She's making it perfectly clear. Look, they're expanding the field. They're talking about Arizona, also investing money in Missouri, Indiana, helping those senatorial candidates. They are focused on trying to build up a massive lead in early voting as opposed to hoping folks turn out on Election Day.
Well, which they have seen. I was talking to a guy who ran Dr. Carson's campaign in Nevada a couple of days ago, and he was saying, Shermichael, Democrats' early turnout, it's amazing. I mean, they're far ahead. He said, in his opinion, he said, I think Trump is going to lose Nevada. You know, keep in mind, and I think people should know this, at the end, it ultimately comes down to your infrastructure on the ground, your ability to target and mobilize your electorate. And if you cannot do that, you cannot win an election. And Trump has relied mostly on the RNC to do that. He hasn't had an infrastructure built whatsoever. And that's going to hurt him.
CJ, you worked at the RNC. You could try to rely on the party, but normally a candidate is the one who's putting boots on the ground.
Well, that is true. But then again, a great deal of individuals that were around Mr. Trump when he decided to get into this race might not have the insider politics in the sense of putting that structure together and the fact that he ran as an outsider, and they didn't want to have a lot of the professional individuals early on because his message was, I'm an outsider, I'm not relying on the establishment to get my campaign this far. And And that's what you have.
Well, bottom line is you still need to actually run a campaign. Of course, he's been on a campaign trail to talk about the issue of African-Americans and when it comes to employment. Check this out, folks. Black workers are seeing the fastest wage growth in more than 15 years. Yeah, in this economy. According to the U.S. Labor Department, they found that weekly earnings rose by nearly 10% for full-time black workers in the third quarter of this year. That's the fastest rate of growth since the year 2000. The increase in earnings since the recession ended in mid-2009 for African-Americans is 15.7%. Latinos are next in line with 15.5%. Whites are a little more than 13%. But the report points out the bulk of the improvement for African-American Latinos has happened in the past 2 years. Despite the wage gains, a large racial pay gap remains. Whites earn about $854 per week, followed by African-Americans at $685 and Latinos at $632. Here to break down this report, William Spriggs, the chief economist for the AFL-CIO and, of course, professor at Howard University. Real simple, when you see these numbers, that's a contrast to what you keep hearing. Oh my God, the economy is so bad, it's so deplorable, and it's just been so awful for African Americans.
Well, a lot of people have been fooled. We called it the Great Recession, but it really was the Great Depression too. By calling it the Great Recession, it sounds like, oh, this is what is easy to manage, but literally this is the worst one on record because we actually didn't even keep records during the Great Depression. So what we're seeing is we're climbing out of it. We've had record months of straight growth and jobs, and now it's finally showing up in wages. African Americans, unfortunately, because of discrimination, are always sort of the last ones to get in on the party. And so the last 2 years, you're seeing it show in African American wages and Latino wages. And what people have really missed is the share of African Americans who are employed has been going up faster than for whites. For whites, for the last 2 years, the share employed has been about the same. But for African Americans, it's shown marked improvement.
And of course, so you have people who will say that, well, so many people have dropped out of the labor force, so therefore, it's so many others who are not even being counted. You hear Trump say that all the time.
Right. Labor force participation rate is down, but we're also an aging economy. And so when you hear labor force participation, that's everyone over 16, everyone over 16. My 95-year-old dad is counted as not in the labor force. So this is included in the numbers. And because we're getting older, the labor force participation rate naturally is falling. A large part of the increase had to do with people being on disability, which actually goes up during downturns. The increase we saw the previous month in labor force participation seems to have been people no longer saying they're disabled. So when you start paying good wages and you start having jobs that people can take, they'll deal with a little backache.
One of the things that I continually said when we talk about this particular economy here is getting people to understand that if you're in a coma and then you're in ICU, that's better than being in a coma. It is as if folks forgot how bad 2008, 2009, 2010 was, and I think that somehow, oh, you just can miraculously just wake up and go jogging. That's not how it works.
Well, exactly, and an excellent analogy, because the severity of this downturn. Remember, we were losing 800,000 jobs a month, and the numbers were going up in January of 2009. So this reversal, where you have a record set of straight months of job growth and the fastest wage growth overall of any recovery, it's digging out of a very, very deep problem. So yeah, the patient finally is stabilized.
Sure, Michael, it amazes me when I hear people talk about this economy, again, as if those things did not happen. And people say, oh my goodness, I know our growth has been so slow. Yeah.
Well, I mean, as the professor alluded, I mean, he's correct. If you're going to go through something which essentially is a depression, I mean, the reason they called it was the Great Recession versus depression was more of a marketing kind of thing. And, yes. And I know that very well working in politics. But, you know, I think, Roland, what you see, and perhaps the professor could better allude to this, we started off in an agrarian stage. We've gone through the industrial stage, which is now coming to an end, and we're leading to this third stage, which some folks are considering the nano stage, all technology. And so you see a lot of people at Trump's rallies, and even folks that supported Senator Sanders, We're talking about, all the jobs, manufacturing have left the economy. That's because the economy is now transitioning to a new phase of things. And if you're not trained for that, then of course you're going to be left behind.
And there are a whole lot of jobs, Bill, that literally do not exist in sectors. Banking jobs, I mean, literally don't exist. I mean, media jobs don't exist. People are still alive, but literally whole sectors have shrunk.
Well, sectors have shrunk because of disruptors. So, like in communications, we've lost a lot of jobs because of the effect of technology in that sector. But a lot of jobs have been lost to trade. So when you look at manufacturing, it's not that we're demanding fewer manufactured goods, and it's not that we're making fewer of them globally. We're just not making them here.
Okay. Bill Spriggs, we appreciate it. Thanks so very much. Folks, when we come back, how crucial are African Americans, Democrats to regaining control of the United States Senate? Talk with North Carolina Democratic Senate candidate Deborah Ross up next. Also, later in the show, Mississippi NAACP wants Justice Department to step in after a shocking racial incident at a Mississippi high school. We'll talk to the head of the Mississippi NAACP right here on the show. 15 for the hour, News 1 Now on TV 1.
Hey, I'm Dondre Whitfield of Queen Sugar. You got just one vote. Use it.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.
All right, folks, we continue with this wild and crazy election. One of the things that's happening, we talked about this yesterday, Congressman Jim Clyburn, as well as Congressman G.K. Butterfield, what they want is a lot of changes made in terms of the Hillary Clinton campaign, putting some money into down ballot races. They say that Democrats could potentially, in their opinion, seriously shrink the margins in the House, of course, also retake the Senate. And so we've been covering that. So coming up right now with the Tom Joyner Morning Show, we're going to talk with Deborah Ross, who is a Democratic senatorial candidate from North Carolina. That is a critical state for Democrats. Yes, indeed. Tom Joyner, how you doing?
I'm good. What's happening, man?
You're all good. Here we go.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this election to be over. My God, my God.
Can make sense of the drama. Say a few words and I'll talk your mama. Make everyone mad and steal back Obama.
From Washington, D.C., and it's 2 weeks away from the election. He's ready for it to end. Roland Martin, good morning.
I keep telling you, this thing goes 2 more months, I want the Zika virus. Give it to me. Also, I've got some breaking news. On Sunday, I will be the starting quarterback for the Houston Texans. It won't cost them $72 million because Brock Osweiler sucks. I've never seen somebody that damn bad for $72 million. Give me $2 million, and I could throw for 64 yards in 3.5 quarters. I'm just saying.
And your Texas, what you going to do about your Texas A&M?
No, first of all, about Texas A&M is fine. First of all, we're 6-1, number 10 in the country. We run the table.
You got beat half to death by Alabama.
No. First of all, we didn't get beat half to death. Let's step back, Mr. Tuskegee. Okay, let's just step back for a second. Didn't get beat half to death. Lost by 18. Had a bad 5-minute pass there. Still number 10 in the country. You went out. We'll end up in the top 6, and we'll be in a Big Six bowl. So calm the hell down. All right,
Roland. I can't speak for all Chicago Bears fans. Like Damon, but could you stay over and play Monday night's game for the Bears, too?
No, actually, I'll be happy to take your quarterback, Jay Cutler, please.
Oh, my God.
All right, then. So enough with the sports there. Let's talk the biggest crazy thing in sports, this political campaign. North Carolina is shaping up to be a huge, huge state, not only for Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, but also down ballot, dealing with the senatorial race as well there, plus the governor's race. Both are on the ballot. And joining us right now is Deborah Ross. She's the Democratic senatorial candidate there in North Carolina. She is facing an incumbent trying to unseat him. Deborah Ross, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
So, first of all, latest polling I've seen shows you down anywhere from 3 to 6 points. Black voters are going to be huge. One of the issues we've seen is that of voter suppression in terms of in this particular state. Federal appeals court said basically what North Carolina is doing is akin to Jim Crow days.
Well, the federal appeals court is absolutely right. It said it targeted black voters with surgical precision. Look, I have fought for voting rights my entire career. I was the sponsor of same-day voter registration at early voting. That bill got passed in 2007, just in time for President Obama to use it to win North Carolina. We've been fighting against Jim Crow ever since the end of the Civil War. This year, I think we're going to show how much we've prevailed.
And one of the other things that also jumps out when you talk about this particular race is that your opponent actually blocked the advancement of several African-American women to federal judge positions.
Oh, well, it's not just that, and I'll go into that. He voted against Loretta Lynch for Attorney General, one of the most qualified people to ever be nominated for Attorney General, and she's from North Carolina. She's from Greensboro. And we can't believe that here. And then there are two African-American women who have been nominated to the courts in the Eastern District of North Carolina. One of them served on our state Supreme Court and was elected statewide two times. I do not know what is wrong with Richard Burr, but he has just got to go.
One of the things that also, when you talk about what's happening there, we also look at what's happening in the, with the economy. We know what took place with the shooting there in Charlotte. And what often happens is when you have violence in different places, folks want to focus on a lot of different factors. But you're still dealing with, beyond that shooting of Keith Lamont Scott, you're still dealing with the issue of economics. What exactly do you plan to do to drive the issue of economics specifically as it relates to African Americans?
Well, first, I want you to know that immediately after the shooting, I was in touch with folks in Charlotte, local elected clergy, citizens, to talk about how to bring the community together and make it so that we don't have these incidents. I have a history of working on anti-racial profiling laws, got them through the General Assembly in a bipartisan way. But as you know, and as you pointed out, this isn't just a law enforcement issue. This is a quality of life issue. We have got to make sure that everybody has economic security. Launched this campaign more than a year ago, talking about protecting Social Security and Medicare, particularly for our seniors. We know our senior women, and particularly our African-American senior women, rely on Social Security and Medicare to live a dignified senior life. We have got to raise the minimum wage. Richard Burr's against that. We've got to make sure that women get equal pay for equal work. We've got to foster entrepreneurship. Our small businesses, many, many African Americans and women run our small businesses. They cannot get access to credit, small business loans, things like that. And we've got to make the internet more accessible. There are two places in North Carolina where it's very difficult to get the internet, some in our inner cities and in our rural areas, predominantly African-American areas. And we know in the 21st century economy, being connected is the key to success.
You have, of course, more HBCUs in North Carolina than any other. What specifically is your HBCU plan?
Well, I am thrilled that for 10 years I represented Shaw University in the General Assembly.
I'll be speaking at Shaw University, the convocation on Friday.
Oh, wonderful. Well, maybe we'll get to see you there. So there are a couple things that we've done in North Carolina that has helped HBCUs, including making sure that students who go to private colleges and universities get grants because, you know, they're not going to state school, so they deserve to get those kinds of grants. We need to increase the Pell Grant program. My opponent voted for a budget that would have cut Pell Grants to more than 200,000 students. We've got to let people be able to borrow at lower interest rates and refinance old student loan debt at today's lower interest rates. There's no reason why the federal government should be making money off the backs of our students. Getting that education is the key to their economic security and our future prosperity.
All right, Deborah Ross, Democratic candidate for United States Senate in North Carolina. Early voting is taking place right now. Folks, we know the lines are very long, but
of course... How the polls in North Carolina for her to win?
Well, we just got a poll from the New York Times yesterday showing us up one. The bottom line here in North Carolina is every vote counts. because most of these races are within the margin of error, and it's all going to be about turnout. And we have got a great turnout machine. And remember, tell folks in North Carolina to register to vote and vote the same day up until November 5th. Thank you so much.
And Tom, we did reach out to the RNC for Senator Richard Burr. We'll see if he responds to our calls to come on.
All right. Huggy next. 26 past the hour.
All right, folks. And coming up right here on News One Now.
Should be walking down the hall or in a locker room and be accosted with a noose around their neck. This is 2016, not 1916.
That's the president of the Mississippi NAACP. He'll join us to discuss the shocking incident that took place at a Mississippi high school. Plus, what would a week without violence look like? Black Women for Positive Change has an idea, and they'll hear to tell us about it. 26 after the hour, News One Now on TV One.
Congressman G.K. Butterfield, you have one vote. Use it.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
The Mississippi NAACP is demanding a federal hate crime investigation following a racial incident at a Wiggins, Mississippi high school. Four white football players at Stone High School allegedly put a noose around the neck of a black teammate and yanked backward. The incident took place 2 weeks ago near a locker room during a break in practice. In a statement, the mother of the black student, Stacy Payton, said in part, "Our family is overwhelmed and distraught. It means so much that the national community values my child's life to discuss the necessity of implementing school policies and laws specific to hate crimes so our children can learn in a safe environment." She also went on to say, "He's not a thug. He's a clean-cut student who's passionate about writing and football. My son just wants to go to school, play football, and become a journalist or a coach. He deserves, as well as all of our children, to be in a safe school, and should something happen, to have the confidence and faith in the administration to follow policy." Joining me right now is the president of the Mississippi State NAACP, Derek Johnson. So, Derek, have the students, the four white players, have they admitted they did this?
We haven't had any word from the students, nor have we had any official word from the school district. We do know the parent of the victim had requested information on what outcomes were taken against the students involved. She did go to the sheriff department to file charges, and she was persuaded not to file charges. And she's simply looking for answers.
Obviously, this is troubling for many reasons. We've seen other stories around the country of hazing that takes place with football players. We saw the case, of course, out west where I think it was in Idaho where some white football players attacked a black student as well. And so the school hasn't commented. Has the school launched an investigation? No students have been suspended.
Well, the mother has not been provided any information. That is why she came to NAACP. What's troubling about this case, it would be one thing if it was simply a football praying hazing incident. But the problem with this case, these are young men who early in the year participated in a school parade, brandishing Confederate flags. They have showed up on campus several times with Confederate flags waving in their truck. And so many people in the community think it's more than just football hazing or student pranks. They think it's something much more sinister than what the school or others may want you to believe.
So you haven't heard from the school. What about the district, the superintendent? I mean, no one has reached out to the mother?
There's been no response to the mother on what the status of this case is. There's been no official word. She tried several times contacting the school district, the school, to no avail. She reached out to the sheriff department to file charges. She was persuaded not to do so because one of the young men involved, her father, is a former law enforcement officer, and she was told that if she did that, she would be faced with intimidation and threats and should not have to go through that. So she came to us looking for answers. And so we decided that we would take on this case to help her figure out the truth, whether or not, in fact, this was a racial hate crime. Our goal is to meet with federal authorities, ask them to investigate, to ensure that this community, this child, this family, receive some answers.
All right, Derek Jackson with Derek Johnson, Mississippi NAACP. We certainly appreciate it. Thanks a bunch, and keep us abreast of what's going on.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a bunch, folks. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and Black Women for Positive Change is working towards a violence-free America. The Root works with youth and violence-prone adults to increase awareness regarding anger management and conflict resolution. They recently held their annual Week of Nonviolence with several violence prevention events across the country, of course. We continue to see this story being in the national news after, of course, the football player with the New York Giants, their kicker. He was, of course, suspended as a result after admitting that he committed domestic violence against his wife. Well, yesterday, he was cut from the team. This continues to be an issue all across the NFL, of course, following the Ray Rice case as well. Joining us right now is a national co-chair of Black Women for Positive Change, Dr. Stephanie Meyer, and the co-chair of Media and Events, Karen Carrington Washington, to discuss how they're combating violence with youth and young adults. This is one of the things that we talk about, again, this particular football player who wrote in these journals about domestic violence against his wife. And what's interesting about that, the team came out fully supportive of him, then leads to the backlash, then they decide to cut him. I remember even the Chris Brown incident. And so how critically important is when you talk about domestic violence that we deal with individuals who are seeing this and experiencing this as kids who then grow up to be abusers as well?
Well, it's absolutely critical, Roland. And it's not just domestic violence that our nation has to really be concerned about. We have a number of forms of violence that our organization is concerned about. Certainly the abuse of law enforcement towards young people in our community, domestic violence, mentally ill people that commit violence and gain access to guns and weapons is a big problem. Bullying's a big problem. And street violence and gang violence. So yes, our young people do have a way of learning about violence up close and personal in the home. It starts with the domestic violence, and then it spans out into the community. As you know, Roland, our country's had a history of this. You just told this story about what went on in Mississippi with somebody putting a noose around a football player's neck. And we have a history that grew out of the founding of our nation. And we know that the Native Americans lost their land, Black people were brought here in slavery. And so we have a history and a legacy of violence. The good news is we can change it. And Black Women for Positive Change believes that by reaching out to leaders like yourself, to leaders like the people you had on earlier, and to the entire nation, we can change this culture of violence, whether it's domestic violence on the football player's role, or whether it's the violence that a gang has out in the neighborhood. We can change this.
Oh, when we talk about changing it, though, it is a question of us not accepting violent images? Is it a question of us getting to adults as well? Because it's interesting, we can talk about how we target youth, but if you don't deal with those who are literally teaching folks the violence, you're going to have the same problem.
Well, it begins in the home, and parents need to encourage their children to have self-respect, but children need to see that their parents have self-respect. And in doing so, that certainly will help to stem the culture of violence. And it's important that children learn positive role models from their parents, teachers within the community. And that's what we're attempting to help do through positive media. We have developed several films to help children think about taking a second thought. That's one of our first DVDs that we developed, and it's called On Second Thought. It's based on a true story out of Boston, Massachusetts. It basically involves somewhat of a little love triangle with a basketball player who is about to go for college football. He has a baby by one young lady. He gets another young lady pregnant. One lady wants to get rid of her competition. And unfortunately, she kills a young lady. So here you have three lives that are messed up, children that will not have parents. And so we want to teach people to take a second thought before you commit any type of violence.
But we're also dealing with, again, how do you scale this, though? Because, again, when you look at the level of violence in our society, people love to talk about Chicago, 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 as if it's not happening in other cities across the country. Look at this country, Blacks largely kill Blacks, whites kill whites. And so how do you scale it to get people to begin to understand how they can actually change it?
Well, we really go out to the leaders and the citizens. We started off in the District of Columbia having annual summits, and then we decided to export the whole idea of the Week of Nonviolence to other cities. So last week was the official 2016 Week of Nonviolence, Justice, and Opportunities. And we had 18 cities, Chicago, Miami, Los Angeles, Houston, your home. We had cities around, and Pittsburgh was involved. We had Denver, Phoenix. So we had 18 cities in states involved, and New Mexico was involved. And we got community organizations, volunteers now, this is not a government program, to have forums with young people and parents and talk about the negative behaviors. In some cities, we screen the film that Karen just mentioned on Second Thought. In other cities, we invited the young people to have hip-hop and rap concerts using nonviolence language. No profanity, but nonviolence and positive themes. And in Baltimore, they had a wonderful event last Friday night where 60 people from the Baltimore community came together, and the hip-hoppers and rappers talked about positive. Here's an example. This is a video that we shot 2 years ago.
Got a question here.
Quick question. So, you know, we know that a lot of inmates are African-American males, and we know that there is also a high recidivism rate. And so my question is, what can not only you guys do as a nonprofit, but what can the government do to assist your organization and similar organizations with lowering recidivism rates and trying to help young African-American males do better as far as violence?
Well, that's why we call it the Week of Nonviolence, Justice, and Opportunities. We need more opportunities. We need to teach our young people entrepreneurship. A lot of the young men in jail are entrepreneurs. They're selling the wrong product, obviously, but they are people who want to make some money. So let's get some opportunities going, people. Minority businesses need to be developed. We need to find new cutting-edge careers for our young people. Our millennial generation and our young people are so smart. Three-year-olds are on pads and tablets. It's incredible. And if they have that kind of wisdom and knowledge, we have to find a way to let them be great. Last year, a young man said to us during the Week of Nonviolence, he said, Dr. Myers, we want to be great, and no one's showing us how. And so the Roland Martins of the world are great. You all are great with what you're doing in politics. We need to take time away from these busy schedules, get off of those telephones, and spend some time helping the young people interpret the environment around them. And they can avoid violence and become the peace leaders in the whole world. We really believe that.
What's your website? Where can folks get more information?
Our website is www.blackwomenforpositivechange.com.
Okay.
Roland, we brought you a copy of the Peace Pledge. Is there any chance we can do the Peace Pledge with you and your panel?
We can do that probably in the break, because unfortunately I got to go to a break right now to pay some bills. otherwise, there will not be peace on this show. So we certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
And
good luck in this. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about what's happening in Haiti, a major humanitarian crisis after the hurricane there. Nearly 1.8 million people desperate need of food after Hurricane Matthew devastated large parts of that country. We will talk with a reporter with the Miami Herald who has been on the ground there for several years. Also, we'll chat with actor Glenn Turman about his experience on OWN's hit drama Queen Sugar. It is 17 before top of the hour. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Hi, I'm Jose Antonio Vargas. I'm founder and editor of EmergingUs.com. You only have one vote. Use it.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV.
3 weeks ago, Hurricane Matthew, a Category 4 monster storm, slammed into Haiti, left massive destruction in its wake, killed more than 1,000 people. Now, the cleanup continues in the hardest hit areas of Haiti, but the flooding and mudslides caused by Hurricane Matthew has made it difficult for relief workers to get to residents in remote areas who are in desperate need of clean water, shelter, and food. The latest United Nations report on Haiti describes a country in crisis with agriculture, livestock, and fishing severely impaired by storm damage. More than 2 million Haitians have been affected by Hurricane Matthew. 1.4 million are in need of assistance. More than 800,000 urgently need food, and 175,000 people have been displaced.
The people we meet in the affected areas often tell us that they've literally lost everything. The agriculture is in shatters. There won't be much production growing from this land for the next 6 to 9 months. So here as WFP, We are supporting the government to access the most remote location. Every day, we manage to reach new villages, new populations, to bring them a much needed nutritious food, to tell them also that they are not forgotten and that we are here to help them rebuild their lives.
The World Food Program says they need $56 million to meet the food assistance needs of the Haitian people over the next 3 months. If you can help out, certainly go online and donate. Here are just two sites that are accepting donations for Haiti, the United Nations Development Program and the World Food Program. Joining us right now from Haiti, Jacqueline Charles, a reporter for the Miami Herald, of course, joining us via FaceTime. Jacqueline, look, you've been covering Haiti for a number of years. And this is, again, just the latest devastation affecting this country and our hemisphere.
Yes, indeed, it is the latest. And I have to tell you that it really is just pure devastation. When I look at a place like Jérémie, which is in the far, far southwest, 100% of the crops there have been utterly destroyed. The fisheries have also been impacted there in that community. And you have people from the poorest of the poor to people who, you know, built their homes in hopes of returning back after retirement. And they've lost it all in this storm.
When you talk about this particular issue, what has been the international community's response? Because, I mean, obviously, Haiti was impacted more than any other country as a result of this hurricane.
Yes, I mean, the international community has not responded like the United Nations would like it to. Ban Ki-moon, the head of the UN, was recently in Haiti, and in his words, he says that he's been disappointed by that response. The United Nations is seeking $120 million for emergency aid over the next 3 months, and as of last week, they had only received 15% or $20 million of that. And so when I asked him about, you know, that slow response, he says, you know, he understands that there's, you know, some donor fatigue. But the reality is that you have a country in crisis. And not only do we have the impact of this storm to deal with, the immediate impact in terms of the devastation to the crops and the loss to people's homes, but you have a situation with cholera now. Use it.
All right, folks, sorry about that video that was just playing right there. That was a serious technical error there. Jacqueline, when we talk, one of the other issues that we've seen from people, they've been complaining about this idea, first of all, what organizations to support, because there was a lot of criticism for the Red Cross and others in the wake of the earthquake that took place in Haiti. And so what about that? Who specifically, if people want to help, who should they be sending support to?
Well, I have to tell you, I've been asked this question repeatedly since the disaster, and I have shied away from giving any recommendations just because I know the concerns that people have had about, you know, organizations like the Red Cross. And at the same time, what I'm finding from people is that they want an organization that they feel that is on the ground, that is going to get things directly to the people. So the best advice that I can give somebody is just do your research, look at these organizations, see what some of them are doing. They may not necessarily be, you know, small organization that you're looking for, but they can be a large organization that's in the country and it's doing a lot of work. The reality is even though this storm has hit five departments or five regions of the country, it's going to have a domino effect, and it's already starting to do that. You have in Port-au-Prince that prices are skyrocketing. You have 117,000 kids who are unable to go to school. We have an election that's supposed to be taking place in 3 weeks, and I don't yet know how they're going to be able to pull that off, given the fact that you have almost 200,000 people who are living in shelters that are mostly schools, and there are over 700 schools that have been either damaged or destroyed. So to me, if you're, you know, if it's an organization, even if they're not necessarily working in Lekai or Jérémie, which are the two main areas that were really hit, but you believe that they're doing good work and they're assisting the people, I say donate.
All right, then. Jacqueline Charles, of course, the Haitian Caribbean correspondent for the Miami Herald. So appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we come back on News 1 Now on TV 1. We'll talk with actor Glenn Turman. We'll talk about his role in Ava DuVernay's hit show, Queen Sugar. 9 before top of the hour, News 1 Now on TV 1.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Glenn Turman is no stranger to the big and small screen, of course. He Leroy Preach Jackson, classic film, Cooley High.
Yes.
Cooley High. Also his role as Colonel Taylor in the hit sitcom A Different World. To playing the part of a psychoanalyst in the popular series House of Lies. Turman has remained a constant in the entertainment world. He's continued to push his career forward, playing a New Orleans family patriarch in the OWN network show, Queen Sugar. Glenn joins me now via FaceTime to talk about his role on that show and more. So Glenn was hitting me up saying, man, I got to do your show. Of course, we played golf. We were in Atlanta at Kenny Leon's golf tournament. Glenn, how you doing?
I'm good, brother. How you doing, Ro?
I'm doing good, doing good. I know it's that early in L.A., so let's talk about this, man. We haven't seen you in quite some time on Queen Sugar because you died. Are you going to have any ghost scenes? You going to come back?
Well, hey, you know, that's not in my hand, you know.
I mean, I know people. Yeah, I can put in a word for you.
Did you? That's good. Well, that's what's been going on. The whole country has been putting in the word for me, so I'm really thankful to everyone. Let me thank all my fans out there for the responses have been fantastic. You know, it's a wonderful show, and if they bring me back, I would welcome the opportunity. Absolutely.
One of the things when I talked to Richard Roundtree, he said that for a long time he resented people calling him Shaft, and his daddy finally told him, said, "Son, if people remember you all these years later, that means that role meant something to them." And he said he finally started embracing it. You cannot get away from Cooley High. That is a black I don't care what you do for the, don't matter. You gonna always be the brother in Cooley High.
Hey, Ro, I was just having lunch yesterday with my brother, Lawrence Hilton Jacobs, who played, of course, Cochise. And we were just talking about, and I saw you there, that the fact that Cooley High is now in the Smithsonian Institute. And you believe that? I mean, that just blew our mind. You know, when I told him I saw us in a segment of Cooley High being on rotation in one section of the new African-American Cultural Center, Smithsonian.
Right.
It was really just overwhelming for me, you know, and we sat there and toasted to the ones who ain't here, like we did, and then just thought about it some 40 years later that people were still thinking about us and remembering us, that four generations have come through and seen that motion picture and been affected by it, and that it has moved on to the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. Who would have thought?
Did I read that somebody wants to do a remake of Cooley High? I'm like, yes.
No.
About my panel here is saying no. They're like, don't touch it.
Absolutely not.
Don't touch it.
Not.
Well, we have mixed emotions on that feeling also. But yeah, the word is going around. Whether it happens or not, I don't know. But you know, if they do, I wish them the best. If they don't, I can understand leaving it alone.
I got a question here. Go ahead, CJ.
Yes, if you had to go and do theater, what play would you do, or do you have something in the works if to go back into theater?
What a question. Now, you know, theater is my favorite medium of all the mediums. And I just came off the stage after a six-week run, highly successful six-week run at the one of the most prominent theaters here in Los Angeles, the Mark Taper Forum, in a wonderful, wonderful August Wilson play called Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. And it was directed by the wonderful, beautiful Felicia Rashad. And man, we tore it up. So that just, we just finished, just closed, just came off the stage last week.
Another question? Who you got? Shermichael?
Oh, no questions.
It's just an honor to be on the show with them. You know, this is royal, this is black royalty. Well, I have another question.
Nice. All right, CJ, go ahead.
Now, if you were, when was the last movie that, or did you ever co-direct or something that you would like to direct or a biopic that you would like to do?
Well, you know, I am a director, and I've got a couple of projects that I'm working on right now, trying to get to the big silver screen, as a matter of fact. You know, the Los Angeles is the greatest place in the world to hunt for money, because in between those, you've got beautiful weather to just play golf all year long. And so you get no. Well, you play golf. Until someone finally says yes. So sooner or later, someone is going to say yes and give me that money that I need to get these projects done.
Well, the real deal is to get a yes on the golf course.
Dang, that works too. You know, that's the way to go. That's why I'm out there.
Well, Glenn,
what, you think I'm chasing that little white ball around?
Well, you know, I enjoy when we hit the golf links in Atlanta. We will do it again. Glad to have you, man.
Hey, you guys have you ever seen Roland out there on the golf course?
No, are you good, Roland?
Oh, I got game. Don't hate now. Let's be clear. Don't hate.
Don't hate, man. That's what I was asking. He's you know how meticulous he is. So he's meticulous in everything, his wardrobe and everything is just to the nine.
And also music on the golf course
And blasting that music all 18 holes.
That's right. We play black golf. Glenn Turbin, I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
Good to see you, man. Good to see you. Thanks for the time, and I'll be looking to see you out there on the golf course.
You know it. You take care. I'll be back on News 1 Now TV 1 in 60 seconds.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Birthday shout-out time. Actor James Pickens Jr. from Grey's Anatomy turns 62 years old. All right, folks, I got to go. I'll see y'all tomorrow. Have a great one. Holla!
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.